96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Networks.
The Revolution with Juan McCartney is brought to you by Wendy's, Ron's Electric Motors, CBS Bahamas, Burger King, Carey's Fabric and Uniform Store, Wim Automotive, and by Dairy Queen.
Good afternoon, Bahamas. This is Imwale Ramming sitting in for Juan McCartney on The Revolution. I hope you had an excellent weekend. We had a scorcher of a weekend, and I'm ashamed to say I spent most of it trying to find an AC that I could stay in. My guest today, Lyndon Nairn, and we're here talking economy, employment, politics, open forum today, open line. So please give us a call. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Actually, can I just say this, though? I think this would be my first time on The Revolution, right?
Wow.
And that's significant to me because Juan McCartney's my hero, man. I'm telling you.
He's mine, too.
Listen, that guy, he has served this country remarkably well. Certainly over the past year, he's been very clear, very passionate, very engaging, very informative. Excellent job. You know, I think he deserves a knighthood, quite frankly.
Well, now that you've set me up for failure, I don't know if I'll attain all of that. But I wanted to start about something that was in the paper today, labor surveys. Mm-hmm. What's our unemployment like? What's it looking like? What's it doing?
Well, you know, that's a good question. According to the official results, unemployment is down. It's below 10% for the first time in quite some time. And I guess depending on one's political perspective or lenses, one would view those results differently. The way I look at them, though, is perhaps an example would make clear my personal perspective. If you have a business, right? And your business is generating $1 million in sales. Let's say perhaps 5 years ago you were generating $1 million in sales. And you had five employees, right? So that would mean that each one of those employees was generating $200,000 per employee for your business, right? And then let's say 5 years later, your business is still generating $1 million in sales. But this time, you've got, let's say, 10 people employed, mm-hmm. right? So you've got 10 people employed. So now each one of them is generating $100,000 in sales. So that's essentially, so what's happened to your business? Several things. First of all, you can make the assumption that your business is not as profitable today as it was 5 years ago.
Right.
And also you can make the assumption that your employees are not as productive as they were 5 years ago.
Right.
So now how do we translate that to our economy? According to the statistical results, the number of individuals employed in the Bahamas has risen dramatically over the past 5 years. Meanwhile, our economy has remained absolutely the same.
Right, exactly.
So that means, essentially, that we as, likely means, that we as a people are significantly less productive today than we were 5 years ago. It also means, that corporate profits are significantly lower today than they were. In addition to that, could also mean, and I think that this would bear us out, that government revenues, right? That government's revenues perhaps are higher, government's expenditure higher as well, because of a rise in employment, public sector employment.
Right.
So all of those things, and I think, so that's how I would look at it, right?
But that doesn't paint a very good picture. It means we're struggling to sort of maintain our lifestyle.
Well, what it really means, quite frankly, is that we are not very productive. And that concerns me. That should concern anyone who has charge over the economy, because it says some things not only to the current employers, but also to people who are looking at investing in our economy, whether they are local or foreign, quite frankly. And so I'm not very pleased with what is being suggested by those numbers, right? Having said all of that, though, I think, firstly, that that we need to be able to generate labor statistics, unemployment numbers, much faster than we are now.
So right? I have been an advocate for the longest time. I spend a significant portion of my professional career in Canada.
Uh-huh.
Canada has an unemployment survey every single month.
Yes.
So every single month they know and they can track and they can see. This also avoids the problem of what if we're sampling at a moment in time that does not reflect the entire 6 months? Because as far as I know, we only do two a year.
Precisely.
So if you're not reflecting the entire 6 months, you can say whatever you want about that particular survey.
Precisely.
But the 4 months prior to that, we might have been at 18% unemployment. And all of a sudden, things just shot up for that particular month, whether it be hotels started to rehire or whatever the case may be.
Absolutely.
And the danger there is not actually getting an accurate picture. So we say unemployment is under 10%.
Mm-hmm.
For the person on the block trying to find a job,
that
statistic means nothing to him, because for 4 months he's been trying to find a job.
Well, it means nothing to him, but it also means not so much to the person who is temporarily employed as well.
Absolutely.
And according to the results, we have perhaps as many as 16,000 such individuals, right? But going back to the issue of the timeliness of the reports, there is absolutely a need for us to devote the resources to the Department of Statistics so that these numbers can be gotten quickly. I mean, this is not a banana republic, I don't think. So we ought to endeavor to do that. And what we should do as well, I think, and this is very, very important, we need to ensure that that unit is as independent as it could possibly
absolutely
be.
Because otherwise it's meaningless.
Absolutely.
Otherwise it's,
absolutely.
I've been doing surveys for almost 20 years now, and early in my career, I had a number that was not favorable to my client. And so I went to my boss, and I said, and this was in the corporate world.
Okay.
And their market share had shrunk.
Uh-huh.
And I went to my boss and I said, you know, my client's not going to be happy. What do we do about this?
Right.
And my boss looked me in the eye, and I'll always remember this.
Uh-huh.
The number is the number.
That's right.
Is the number, number, right? Like, you can't change it around, fluff it around.
Right.
You need, if you go to a doctor and ask the doctor to find out what's wrong with you, and the doctor look and see you have cancer and say, well, I won't tell him he got cancer because he ain't going to like that.
Yeah.
Don't bother go to the doctor.
Absolutely.
So we do have to start relying on those numbers, and those numbers have to be reliable for us to
precisely
do that.
Precisely. And the numbers, we must not only be in fact reliable, right? But we must believe that they're credible. We must believe that. Okay, so I'm an advocate, actually, for doing what is necessary to make that unit more independent. And also, quite frankly, involving at a board level, if you will, persons who are not directly employed by the Department of Labor. And I think, you know, you've got such structures perhaps in Jamaica and other Caribbean countries where you would have, for example, an independent economist, someone who's not attached to the government.
So are you saying they should be dealing with a private firm, a private research firm? Is that what you're advocating? Because I couldn't possibly advocate for that.
Well, not entirely, quite frankly, right? Not entirely. I think, first of all, you know, I think that the persons employed at the department, all of my interactions have been quite favorable. I think that they are quite capable.
And I agree with you 100%. Yeah, I agree with you to your earlier point, though. I don't know that they have the necessary resources.
They don't.
To do everything we need them to do.
Absolutely, they do not. And they need to have the resources. This information is important for policymakers. It's important for business people. It's vital, man. It's vital.
For policymakers, a lot of times people say, oh, well, I don't want to govern by polls. Mm-hmm. It's not a question about governing by polls. It's about really looking at, A, what are the your people telling you? Mm-hmm. And then if they're telling you something other than what you plan to do, explaining to them why you are doing something different than they want.
That's absolutely essential.
And the conversation is completely different. If everybody wants you to do one thing and you want to do it, great. You don't have to explain yourself. Everyone's... But if you have a vision or a plan that people aren't seeing, you need to know that.
Absolutely.
And you need to be able to figure out how to tell them that.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And but here's what we do. And I'm happy you raised that point because it allows me to say this. What we have done historically in this country is we have listened only to the loudest voices, right? And they are few. And I dare say they are not representative of the population.
Absolutely.
You know, someone calls into the radio, for example, and says something that few people agree with, but he is loud, and everybody, and then the moderator says, oh, well, you know, every Bahamian believes this or that. We draw conclusions from a single loud voice.
And I see it all the time.
I listen to the radio quite a bit, and very often you hear somebody says, oh, man, what's the issue? All Bahamians, you know, Bahamians believe X, Y, Z, right? Drawing a conclusion about an entire population from two or three or four or five loud individuals who call into the radio stations.
I'm glad you brought that up because it helps me explain why we started Public Domain. I was living in Canada in 2010, 2009, and my mother was living here, and I would visit frequently. And at the time, we were talking about marital rape. And a lot of people were saying, Bahamians feel this way, Bahamians feel this way. So I turned around and I started to say, well, what do Bahamians actually think?
Right.
And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, what do the polls say? And the people said, oh, we don't do that here. And I thought, from a policymaking standpoint, our policymakers should probably know what Bahamians actually feel about something and not just the loudest voices that we hear on the radio.
Absolutely.
So in case you guys want to know, that was the first study that we did when we opened up in July of 2010. And roughly two-thirds of Bahamians agree that we should change the law. And if you want to know the interesting part there, only about 53% of men think we should change it.
And every woman.
Over 70% of women think we should change it.
Right.
Not that we've done anything with the policy, but I just wanted to explain. That's why data is needed to make policy. And the same thing here with unemployment. You cannot be governing. What if unemployment is down to 3%? So you're out here trying to do this job creation, when you could be focusing on education.
But
you're focusing on something because you do not have the data to say, okay, we've done a good job at that. Now let's see what else we can concentrate on.
Yeah, but, you know, listen, I think it is responsible of us, right, to accept the numbers as we have been told, right? But you and I know, if we were to look at the anecdotal evidence, right, we would perhaps arrive at a competing conclusion, right? I don't know how appropriate it is to say that or to even do that, but I think based on what I have seen and the crime level, I believe that there is a strong link between unemployment and crime. Now, I know that broadly speaking, I don't think that can be debated.
Okay. I think that's a fact.
Right.
And there's multiple ways we can look at that.
I'll tell you, you know, I must tell you, I know there's a renowned criminologist, Bahamian criminologist, who always debated that. He always said, you know, listen, I grew up with unemployed people, but they never committed crime. Right. But I'll
throw this into you. This is another one that's been proven time and time again for me. One of the philosophies that I follow in criminology is that crime can be predicted based on poverty in proximity to wealth.
Okay.
And in the Bahamas, we have extreme poverty in close proximity to extreme wealth.
Yes.
So I'll give you this. I went to Palestine, and while I was there, I asked one of the guides, I said, how is crime here? And he looked at me and said, there's no crime here. And I said, that doesn't make sense. Everything I see on the news, you're lying to, you know, sort of protect your population. And he said, when nobody has anything, nobody steals anything. Nobody gets mad because you stole anything.
Right.
He says, so poverty in proximity to wealth, along with unemployment, under education, yes. And yes. And no education,
yes,
are great predictors of crime, and we see it time and time again.
Absolutely. You know, that's a very interesting point that I hadn't considered. I know someone said, you know, we're always comparing the Bahamas today with the Bahamas in the 60s. But quite frankly, if you think about it, our grandparents didn't have very much in any event, right?
There exactly.
Was not much to steal from them.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I take the point.
And even I went to Samity's in Cat Island a few years ago, and he has these bicycles that he leaves for his guests. And I said to him, I said, you're not going to lock them up or anything?
Right, right.
And he said to me, why would I? I said, well, what if someone takes it? He said, well, they can bring it back.
Is that right?
So the sort of the crime, right. let them take it if they need it,
right.
But they're going to bring it back.
They're going to bring it back. Wow, that's incredible.
I also think that we need to start, and I'm stressing this a little bit, I think we need to have more regular, reliable data that's published to the public,
absolutely.
So that we can inform ourselves. I had my sister telling me yesterday, I wish I'd been informed more about things that our governments historically have been doing. And I pointed out to her that you probably have been informed, but you probably weren't willing to hear. And she says, why do you think that is? I said, because once you don't trust, then it doesn't matter what the person says.
You know that's a very, very important point that you make. Because I think if you were to study the history of the Bahamas, right? If, for example, you were to read the speeches of Sir Lyndon Penland, you would be amazed at how relevant every single one of them is today. Because we are still confronting the same issues.
So if you take Lyndon's speech from Freeport in the convention, and I believe it was either 77 or 78.
Right.
I actually went back and read that. And I read it without seeing the top part of it.
Right, and you didn't.
And I said, when was this? Because this is exactly as it is today. He talked about everything we face today.
I'll give you a couple that I can recall. In 1969, right, Sir Lyndon gave a speech in which he talked about the appropriateness of foreign investment. And he made the point. He said, listen, we have examined this, right? And he said, we understand already that not every foreign investment is good for our country. And we have to be very deliberate with respect to what we allow into our country. And it cannot change. And listen, he said, it cannot change the character or the culture of our country. An excellent speech. And then there's another one. In 1974, I believe, Sir Lyndon gave a speech in which he said something to this effect. He said, listen, I have been reliably informed that the vast majority, in fact, I think he said the number that he gave was close to 70%, that 70% of the corporate earnings in this country are made by companies that are not owned by Bahamians, right? He said that's significant. And this is why he said that's significant. He said, if we are going to find a way to develop this country internally, we have to find a way to get that number down. Now, he didn't do enough, as far as I'm concerned, to do that. I think he ought to have done some real significant things right away. For example, in banking, I think he could have done some things. He could have, for example, back then, and it's still not too late for us to do it, he could have insisted that the banks sell a certain percentage of their shares to Bahamians. He could have started that process. And that would have been meaningful. But the observation was made. The observation was relevant then, and it's still relevant today.
And I'll tell you this. I always repeat this. I don't think that foreign direct investment is an evil necessarily.
It's not an
but
evil.
But when you hear it, I also want you to hear foreign direct ownership.
Right.
As long as you're hearing the two at the same time so that you understand.
Right.
That is not Bahamian ownership.
Right.
So that money that is made from that investment.
Right.
The vast majority of it, and maybe not the vast in some cases, but the majority of it will be repatriated back.
Yeah. I think we appreciate, I certainly appreciate that foreign direct investment is absolutely essential, right? I mean, it's absolutely essential. I mean, our standard of living, the way because we don't produce very much of what we consume.
Very much.
We need foreign direct investment from the capital side to take care of our ordinary expenditures. So I get that. I mean, that's absolutely essential. So I'm not running away from that. But I do think that there is a lot more that we should be doing to encourage domestic investment, and perhaps we can talk about
that. Do you think if domestic investment was higher, we would have less of an employment problem? Meaning
absolutely.
That Bahamians owning these things
yes,
would be...
Yes, that's the formula. Absolutely. That's an important part of the formula, because what happens is you would have those corporate profits, and you go back to what Sir Lyndon said in 1974. His point was that if we were able, and he said if we were able to get the gross corporate profits in this country owned by foreign entities down to 40%, he said it would substantially reduce our dependence on foreign direct investment, because we would be able to grow this economy from domestic investment. That was his point.
So let me ask you, why haven't we done it?
We haven't done it because we really have not sat down and come up with a clear vision with respect to how it should be done. I'll tell you this, and I think what we have not done in this country, right, is we have not challenged the status quo sufficiently. We are wedded to the way we have done things historically for reasons that are beyond my comprehension, right? Beyond my comprehension. If it's not working, we ought to just abandon it. Why do we continue doing the same thing every time and expecting a different result? What we ought to be doing today, for example, the Prime Minister made the point recently that he is going to require permanent secretaries to go into the corporate environment to get some sort of formal training. I think that's an excellent idea. I think that's going to help considerably, right? But the question is whether that's going to be enough. You need to go to
No, we got a call, but go ahead and finish.
The question is whether that's going to be enough. I think it's an excellent start, but this is what I think the real issue is. One of the major issues, rather. What we need to understand in that whole, when we compare the private sector to the public sector, we need to realize that yes, while your permanent secretaries might be the equivalent of your CEO, your ministers are the equivalent of who? See, and that's very important. Your ministers would be the equivalent of your shareholders, essentially, because right. They represent the people. Now, you have to ask yourself, in a private environment, right? In a private sector environment, how do your shareholders interact with the company? This is very important, because if you can get your CEOs right, but if you don't get your shareholders right, my brother, if you don't get your ministers right, then you're going to have problems. So what's the point here? The point is that we have to look at how at the significance and the role of cabinet and the prime minister's office in this country. Okay, because as far as I'm concerned, based on what I have seen over the decades, right, over my 52 years, I haven't been observing that long, but as long as I can remember, right, quite frankly, I believe that the cabinet of the Bahamas is a drag on the economy of the Bahamas, and it's not being done intentionally. It's just a matter of fact. It is systemic, and it needs to be remedied.
I'm glad you're my guest today, because you really are talking revolution right now. Let's take a call. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. How are you guys?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Listen, Juan McCartney.
All of us are.
But you guys are doing an awesome job.
Thank you.
Okay. what I'm calling in reference to the headlines, the PLP considering demonstration on the anniversary of the Lyndon's death. Now, to me, that's an insult and a slap in the face. Because, what you're demonstrating over the law taking its course?
And I think you need to ask them that, because I don't really know.
Huh?
I don't really know.
That's exactly what they're demonstrating over, the fact that they leave government, right, with a bunch of unanswered questions, okay? And if you come in, a new government come in, and there are a lot of misappropriate funds and allegedly corruption that they're investigating, don't they have a right to do so? Or because it's something new, they're supposed to just close a blind eye,
One of my favorite Canadian politicians once said that the answer to that is, you always say, call the police, have them do an investigation, and if anybody did anything illegal, send them to jail.
That's what I'm saying.
That's all it is.
But that's all that's happening now, is they're doing their investigation, and they put it before the court, and they must have sufficient evidence to put it before the court. And then
now let's remember, innocent until convicted.
Well,
so,
that's what I'm saying. So why don't these guys wait to see what's the outcome? And who guys I'm talking about?
Well,
Bradley Roberts and Mitchell. They don't. Who else are you hearing making noise? Only those two poisons?
Yeah.
Yeah. You hear anybody else?
No. I'm agreeing with you.
Only those two poisons. So what's the them two? So.
Yeah. Well, I think.
Yeah.
I think if I may, with respect to the PLP, right? I would say that this country needs a strong, progressive, liberal party, right? Having said that, the current leadership of the PLP is extremely weak, right? And there is nothing that the individuals who currently hold the offices, right, can do to remedy that reality, okay? That's not going to be fixed by them, okay?
I agree.
It's not going to be fixed, but the PLP as an entity is relevant, and as long as those who currently occupy the seats of leadership in that party continue to do what they are doing, they are going to continue to damage that party.
I am telling you.
Now let me say this further though. I want, because I think this is important. I think that the Bahamian people need to come to a place of maturity where there is less emotion, right? Emotional attachment to a political party, right? Less emotional attachment, and more of us requiring them to be accountable and to be visionary, right? I think that is absolutely essential. So, however, if you have a handful of people who have taken over a political party, and for whatever reason, they make the decision that they are not going to listen to the clear voices of the Bahamian people, I believe it would be time for the Bahamian people to say to them, go, just take your things and do whatever you want with it.
I think that's what they said.
No, that's what they said previously, but I'm saying, say it again. You say it again, and that essentially means, you know, when we used to play basketball kind of thing, and one of the fellas get mad or whatever, some you say, man, you know, take your things, you want, go, you know, that's yours, it's, you know, go do whatever you want with it. You see what I'm saying? And he's left by himself, and perhaps that is where the current leaders in the political party are leading this once great entity.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for your call.
I agree with you.
I appreciate the call. Thank you. So you're really talking revolution, because now you're talking revolution with cabinet and revolution within the leadership of the PLP.
But you know, listen.
This is a good Monday.
But listen.
Let me take a break.
Okay.
We're going to continue this when we come right back. You're listening to The Guardian. Normally with The Guardian Radio, The Revolution, normally with Juan McCartney, but with me, Emwale Ramming, and Lyndon Nairn today. We'll be right back.
Introducing Introducing Popeye's new Hot Honey Crunch Tender. For only $6, stop by today and order 3 handcrafted tenders marinated in spicy honey seasoning and hand-battered and breaded in a crispy coating. Fried up fresh and drizzled with our new Red Hot Honey Sauce. Complete this meal with your favorite side and a buttermilk biscuit. Order our Hot Honey Crunch Tenders for only $6. They're sweet with a little bit of heat.
Love that chicken from Popeyes.
When I need a part for my car, I need it now. So I save time and shop online at WhimAuto.com. I can use my smartphone and search the entire inventory at WHIM Automotive. I put in the car part, the year, the make, the model, and click. It's all right there. No more waiting around in the store for me. Click, pay, and pick up. Save time and shop online at WhimAuto.com.
Everybody has a favorite DQ Blizzard, but did you know you can get your favorite Blizzard treat as a custom cake? That's right, your favorite DQ Blizzard layered with vanilla soft serve, personalized for someone special, a special occasion, or just because. It's the Blizzard you've always loved in a whole new way, starting with the new DQ Mini Blizzard Cakes at only $17.99. These sweet treats are offered in a variety of shapes and sizes to match your occasion, and it's only from your DQ. This is fan food, not fast food.
Let's all go to Dairy Queen.
I'm so excited. My brand new house just finished, and I went to CVS Bahamas to get just about everything I needed. I got all my bathroom fixtures, kitchen cabinets and supplies, indoor and outdoor decor, beautiful housewares, my Hurricane Impact certified windows and doors, electrical supplies and tools, everything to make my lawn and garden look good, and all my paint in the exact color I wanted. That's CVS Bahamas in the Southwest Plaza Carmichael Road. Call 677-2100.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators and generators back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them at 242-356-0249.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back, Bahamas. You're listening to The Revolution, normally with Juan McCartney, but with Juan being unavailable. He's asked me and Wale Ramming to step in. My guest today, Lyndon Nairn, and we're talking, oddly enough, revolution. Revolutionary thinking, changing the way we think about different things in the Bahamas. And we were talking about, we started off with economy, but now we've gotten on to the heart and soul of the Bahamian people. We are a community that, and I don't get started because I know y'all gonna say there's exceptions. I know there's exceptions, but we are a community that likes to take care of one another.
Absolutely.
Why do we end up with the problems that we end up with?
You know, that's a very good question because you're right. As we were talking during the break, the fact is that we're all related.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it. And years ago, we were even more related then than we are now, right? I think that our problem is that we have grown into a selfish people, self-centered. We're all chasing after material things, and it doesn't matter to us who we step on to get it. And the other thing that I think motivates us is that we don't want anybody to have what we have, okay?
Right.
We don't want that. I think if for us, it's a zero-sum game. So if you're doing well, it must mean that I'm not doing well. So I'm going to make sure that you're not doing well. And the next thing is, and all of these things are related, quite frankly, we just don't serve one another well. We don't know how to really take, if I have a business, right? I don't know, or if I'm working for a company, and you step in, I don't know how to take on your problem and seek to solve it as if it were mine.
Right.
To treat you the way I would want to be treated. And that's amazing.
Well, to your first point, I always tell people this. It's like we don't realize what we're doing is like stealing toothpaste from my wife.
Mm.
When you don't pay that money and you figure out a way to get customs duty that you don't have to pay, well, that's money that wasn't going to the government. The government then couldn't afford the school lunch program.
Right.
And then your neighbor's child who can't learn properly,
right,
doesn't graduate, can't find a job, break into your house, steal your TV that you didn't pay duty on.
Absolutely.
And it's not realizing that it's almost direct, because we are such a small community, that's what it's like.
Absolutely.
Stealing toothpaste from your wife.
Absolutely.
At some point, you can realize
absolutely. It
makes no sense.
But you see, but absolutely. And that's why, for example, right, we all need to accept responsibility for the fact that our economy is not growing. Because it's not growing because we are not productive. We're not working hard enough.
Why is that? I tell people this all the time. Mm-hmm. Bahamian people are the nicest, most polite people in the world.
Right.
Until you make it their job. So I give the example
until
of...
Until you make being polite job.
I was walking one day, and I was wearing a shirt and tie. I don't remember where I was going, but it was a small walk, maybe a three-minute walk. And in that three-minute walk, three different cars stopped and asked me, "Everything all right, you need a ride?" Sure. I was like, that's my Bahamian people.
Right.
At the end of that walk, I walked into a store. As soon as I walk in the store, the clerk suck her teeth because now she got to work.
Oh.
We are the nicest, most polite people until we make it your job.
I understand.
And we often mix service with servitude.
I agree. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a problem as well. I have observed, right? You go into a company, Standard Line. In fact, when was it? Just today. I went to a certain business establishment. I took my stuff. I got $160 worth of service from this entity. I don't want to say more than that because it would be obvious where I went. I got $160. But when this person saw me, the way she approached me, I actually wanted to turn around. I wanted to leave that establishment and go somewhere else, because I don't know whether she was having a rough day. But I was conscious of that possibility that maybe, you know, maybe she had a difficult evening or whatever. And so I saw it as best as I could to reflect that and to be very, very nice with her.
But isn't that odd that you are reflecting onto her?
Yeah, but I tried. I think sometimes, and I think we have to be careful of that too, right? I mean, we have to realize that sometimes people are having a difficult time. But that's not an excuse. And the reality is that we see it far too often. It happens more often than not. Your interactions with people who should be serving you, that is their absolute job. That's how they get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than serving you with a smile, they do so with a frown. And it's totally unacceptable. But more significantly, what bothers me is that there is no sense of urgency in the Bahamas.
Right.
You know, my aunt, I had an aunt, and she used to say, "Boy, well, you get up and go on. So you get up and go, got up and ready."
Got up and ready, yep.
And I mean, you go into these establishments, and that is precisely what you observe.
And I bet you if we did a study and we compared the two, you would find that people spend more money in a place where they have better service. I guarantee you'll find that.
Absolutely.
We have a text message says, "We're not productive because we hire and promote the best educated as opposed to the most productive."
I think there's something to that, but I would also say, though, that the responsibility for ensuring productivity and good service rests largely with your managers, right? Either through observation, either through setting targets and those kinds of things. You know, we don't do a good job with stuff like that at all, right?
Yeah.
People have to be trained, and a lot of this I know is not training. A lot of this is just common sense and courtesy. You know, just recognizing that, you know, you're a fellow human being, you deserve to be treated with respect, and you should expect the same from me.
Yeah. Well, actually, another point in this, and I don't know how it is for everyone else, my company has been open for 7 years, and I don't take credit for the fact that we've been able to stay open for 7 years. I have a pair of managers who have taken ownership in the company. So when they see me spending more money on supplies than I should, or they know I could do it differently, they'll come to me and they'll say, we could do this different. Now, are they perfect? They're not perfect.
Right.
But they have taken such ownership that is the reason we've been able to stay open for 7 years.
See, and that is the kind of environment you need to inculcate, right? In order to get that sort of result, man, they need to buy into the organization. And one of the issues, if you look at the public sector, right, there's really no buy-in.
This is a text message that said, good afternoon. Do you think that woman cared if you left the shop? The woman who sucked her teeth when I walk in.
You know,
this is what we're talking about.
I don't think she would have cared.
But if she understood that her job, meaning her owner's ability to pay her check at the end of the week, rested on the fact that he needs to have her make those sales, if she could get that, and meaning if sales go up and salary goes up accordingly.
Right, but let's talk about that for a moment, right? If you were to ask me, if you say, Lyndon, we've got a problem. We have this company, attitudes are not good. What do you do? And you come to me and you say, perhaps this person doesn't know that. I say, well, you know what? Maybe we need some training. Maybe we need to tell her. We need to show her how there is a direct link between what people spend in this organization and what she earns. And perhaps there needs to be some incentive program as well. You see what I'm saying? Maybe 100% of her compensation should not simply be salary for showing up. Maybe a part of it should be linked to the sales that she generates.
And then when we do that, she's going to say, you cut my pay.
Let's be clear now. Let's be clear. I'm not suggesting that we do that. I'm saying on top of what she earns. You know,
often difficult to find, right? Because it's easy to say when I... you know, bought a newspaper.
Right.
This is how much money I made off the newspaper. But if you were in the service industry, that's different. It's difficult to quantify.
You know, I think I've been privileged to work for a number of entities, right? And if my memory serves me correctly, every single one that I worked for, there was some kind of incentive on top of the base salary tied to net income of some kind. I'd really encourage business owners to do that, to provide some kind of incentive. 5% of the net income going to, or 10% going to the employees of the establishment. You'll be amazed at the level of buy-in you get at that point.
And that's what they did with JetBlue in Canada, right? They made that company owned by all the people
eventually,
who work for it.
Absolutely. And the service today?
Service is very good.
Service is excellent, right?
Yeah. I think we got to go to our 1 o'clock break. Thank you. Hold on. We'll get back to you if you're on the phone. We'll get back to you when we come from the 1 o'clock break. You're listening to The Guardian Radio, and this is The Revolution.
The Mushroom and Swiss Burger is back at Burger King Nassau. And this year, it's bigger and better than ever. Introducing the new, deliciously big Mushroom and Swiss King. This sandwich features two slices of Swiss cheese in between two quarter-pound savory flame-grilled beef patties topped with thick-cut smoked bacon, party mushrooms, and a creamy mayonnaise, all on a toasted sesame seed bun. The new Mushroom and Swiss King Burger tastes as good as it sounds and is only available at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Boy, you see what just going down?
No, Dre, what going on?
Pokemon them stand up Grammy on the corner and take up pension money. Dread and broad daylight dudes them cut movie, my boy.
No, man.
Dread, these dudes need to stop. That could have been my old lady.
Boy, real dog. You can get them off the streets by calling Crime Stoppers or reporting what you see up in the Grammy.
Then I would be like old dad dog on the side of the street?
No, but you safe. Calls answered in Miami or Toronto, Canada. And you ain't giving them no personal information. They just give you a PIN number.
What I could do with PIN number? I can't eat it.
Boy, when they arrest Pokemon, you can call Crime Stoppers with that PIN number and get some cash. Like they say, tip for tip.
You say I get cash? What's the number you say?
From Nassau, call 328-TIPS or free from the Family Islands at 242-300-TIPS. Together, we can stop crime before it's our time.
Call 328-TIPS or from the Family Islands, 242-300-TIPS.
When I need a part for my car, I need it now. So I save time and shop online at WhimAuto.com. I can use my smartphone and search the entire inventory at WhimAutomotive. I put in the car part, the year, the make, the model, and click. It's all right there. No more waiting around in the store for me. Click, pay, and pick up. Save time and shop online at WhimAuto.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to The Revolution, normally with Juan McCartney. However, with Juan being places unknown, doing things unknown. Mwale Ramming, I'm here hosting for him and my guest today, Lyndon Nairn. And we've been talking, I wish I could say what we've been talking about, but we've been talking about all manner of things.
Yeah.
We've been talking about productivity, why we aren't as a people more productive, especially when we're told, and I don't know how true this is, we have one of the highest labor force, highest priced labor force in our region.
Mm-hmm.
So our labor is costing more than anywhere else in the region, and we are being less productive.
That's right, and we are being less productive. And I, you know, listen, I think it's also important, though, to say that we certainly don't want to be all negative on this program, right? There are places that I've gone where the service has been exceptional, right? There are restaurants that I can think of, I visited, and I mean, everybody comes and to you and wants to serve and do what you would expect. The other day, on last week, Thursday, I believe it was, I went into a store out east to buy something, to buy a pair of tennis. And, you know, I was greeted at the door.
And I want to be clear, at the door. Anybody knows me knows that I think that the Bahamas is the best little country in the world. Yeah. And these things we're talking about are not exceptions, but problems that we need to look at.
Absolutely.
I'll go further with your tennis story and let you know that this morning, the woman who works in the tennis store nearest my house called me to tell me that the type of tennis that I've been looking for is there.
Amazing.
If I want to come pick it up.
Absolutely.
I believe we have a caller. Let's take this call. Good afternoon. You're on the air. Good afternoon, you're on the air. I guess that caller left. So we do have places where service is excellent and productivity is excellent.
Absolutely.
But we do need to also look at ourselves in the mirror and tell the truth. So this business of lying to one another and saying everything is perfect, it leads to us not fixing things.
Absolutely.
So we do need to look at, we have some bad service in some of our places. And a lot of times it's because, I mentioned this earlier, we confuse service with servitude. I tell those young people who don't want to work in a service industry, yet you'll pay $100 to go see a concert, not realizing that that's a service industry.
Absolutely.
He is coming there to perform for you because you are paying him.
We all serve, man. We all serve one another.
Exactly.
There's no question.
Let's take another call. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hello?
Can't hear you. Can you turn down your radio?
Okay. We were told by our forefathers, our parents, what we give the world, we can't take back. Well, when it comes to certain rights in respect to the Bahamian people's sovereign inheritance, certain information was not told to the people. A whole lot of stuff. See, a whole lot of pastors, a whole lot of this one, the next one talking. We have a whole lot of accountants. I want the accountants and the pastors to think about this. What would our nation be 5 years from now when, if we can have a caring group of men and women who knows their children, their grandchildren, their neighbors' children, everyone is connected to them one way, shape, or form because of this thing called Bahamian and this place called the Bahamas. I want y'all to know, we know how much money y'all disclosed in to before the election. I have one question. Don't y'all think the Bahamian people ought to be able to live a decent life when y'all know the natural wealth of this country, the creator, it's the figure on it, Bahamas. world. If they don't want to fight for it, then I'm going to have to come and get it to help me get this stuff because I want it back. And the Bahamian people are saying, retroactive. I am King Amos. Y'all have a good day.
Thank you for your call. I think we have another call. We've lost that one. I have a text message here. It's a long one. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but what they are pointing out is that oftentimes for our labor force, we do not allow or promote on-the-job training and job readiness. Sorry. Is that a bigger deal that I'm thinking? Is that a lot of instances where we could be doing better?
No, we can. Absolutely. And I think one of the, the two things that companies tend to do immediately when they're faced with financial challenges, right? They reduce or eliminate their marketing budgets, very bad idea, and or they eliminate or reduce training, right? And both of those are bad ideas, quite frankly.
Because you're not going to get better by doing less.
Precisely, yeah, right? You know, what you want to do is you want to be more creative. You want to make sure that your employees understand what is happening. The what is really, really important for those persons who are privileged to own businesses or to be in supervisory or management positions, some sort of leadership position, is this, right? That we often look at the broader picture of government and we complain about what the government is doing and there is no transparency and we don't know what we should know, et cetera. We don't know how to respond and how to act, et cetera. Well, we have an opportunity as people in those positions, right, to do what we believe and what we know is the right thing to do. As it relates to your employees, it makes sense. They're there. They can help you so much if you are transparent, if you're having regular meetings, if you are assessing your employees on a regular basis, looking at their strengths and weaknesses and trying to
give them feedback.
Trying to give them feedback. And also one of the things that you should be doing is trying to see how your employees can be developed so that they can move to another level in your organization and perhaps even out of your organization. I mean, it doesn't make sense really trying to keep someone at the same level. That should be perhaps your number one responsibility to the people who work for you. How do I help to develop Sally into a better individual so that Sally begins to self-actualize?
That's a very good point. We're going to take a caller. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm listening to this conversation about productivity. All right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting conversation, but I'm trying to understand if you guys are saying that the productivity is leading to the lack of growth in the economy on the whole.
It is the lack of productivity affecting growth, right? The answer to that question is yes. If people are not being productive, it means that companies are spending more, that corporate profits are lower than they would be otherwise. It means that there is less investment dollars out there to start new businesses and to grow existing businesses, those kinds of things. So absolutely.
Can I add on to that? I just wanted to get an understanding of this thing, right? The bulk of our money that comes into our economy comes from tourism, correct?
Yes.
And I'm a businessman. I also worked in the tourist industry for a number of years. I agree with you. I agree with you guys both on the productivity of the human people. But I slightly disagree with that cost and the contribution to the growth of the economy. And I'll tell you why. The money that comes in this country from the tourism industry predominantly comes from our main hotel. We all know what our main hotels are. And I would dare to say that our main hotels, the individuals that work in the hotels, the main hotels,
mm-hmm.
they are productive individuals. Because you have no other choice but to be productive or you lose your job.
Okay.
Atlantis was not going to keep you there if you're not productive.
Okay. Now,
Mm-hmm. So now I just want to make a point. I'm not saying that we, in general, are not productive in many of the small businesses, but our main industry, which is tourism, the hotels, the main hotels that generate the majority of money in this country, they're not going to keep people in there never productive.
Sure.
So no. I would like to make another point.
But may I comment? I'd like to make a comment with respect.
Well,
to
I know I say I'm going to hang up and just listen to your comment. Can I
no,
make one short point?
Okay, go ahead. Sure, go ahead.
Also, we elect a small group of people to lead this country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they basically make decisions based on the whole, they make decisions based for every behemoth, based on what we do with our with the money that we have available, the funds we have available.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we collect in millions of dollars in revenues from tourism, from customs, from whatever revenue that we earn, from whatever revenue from any businesses or whatever, and this money is not being used properly.
Mm-hmm.
We have to also bear in mind that we have to blame our leaders for not using the money properly over the years. I mean, consecutive government to grow the economy in the right way. They're not thinking innovative. They're not doing what they need to do. A lot of money is being mismanaged and fake. And that is leading to the majority of the lack of growth in the Bahamian economy.
Right.
Now, I do agree that Bahamians, some are not productive in the different aspects and the different jobs. But the majority of our lack of growth is not from the average Bahamian not performing on his job.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I think you've made some excellent points. I totally agree with certainly the last statement that you made. Now, as it relates to productivity in the hotel sector, right? You have made the assumption that persons in the hotel sector are productive, but let's make the assumption that they are not, just for the sake of discussion, right? If they are not as productive as they ought to be, or if they're not as productive, let's say, as workers in other countries, what it means is that in the Bahamas, in order to ensure that they achieve a level of profitability, that the hotels in the Bahamas are going to have to price their products a lot higher than similar products in other countries, okay? So that's going to have a negative impact on your growth as well, because you're not, you know, if persons who are price sensitive are going to go into a jurisdiction where the price is lower. I hope that is clear. As it relates to government's role, absolutely, the government plays a vital role in the direction of the economy. Not only, and while this is a very important point, I don't think it's number one. Government, the way government spends its money, yes, affects the size of the economy, but I don't think that that's the number one issue. I think that there are other points that we have to look at.
Let me take this, because I want me and you to get into that. Let's take this call. It's been waiting, because I also think government should have no business directing the economy.
Okay, sure.
But we'll take another call. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Oh, and one more, let's try this other one. Go ahead, caller, you're on the air. Hello? No, I guess we lost that. So I wanted to make a point to you is I don't believe government should necessarily be involved in the economy other than getting out of the private sector's way.
Right.
And making policy that allows the private sector to grow.
Right. And you're not going to have too much of a disagreement with me, except, right, that governments the world over are a significant part of your economy, right? And in the Bahamas, our government is 26% of our economy, or perhaps even more, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first point. I mean, by virtue of the fact that so they collect taxes and they're engaged in all of these activities, etc. Now, I believe that the government, I agree with you that the government should ensure that it is efficient, right, in its response to the private sector. Response meaning where approvals are necessary, that they get them
getting
quickly.
Out of the private sector.
You get it done quickly. Correct. Can I say something with respect to that? Let me make this point. I think that in the Bahamas, what we've done is we have settled for mediocrity, right?
Okay.
We have settled for low economic growth. We've settled for 2%, for 3%. Because that's what we have been told.
Right now, we would love 3%.
Listen, yeah, and you know, in fact, we would settle for 1%, right? Yep. You know, but we have such low expectation. How did we get to a point in this country, right, where we're no longer aspirational? How do we get here? How do we get to a point? Think about it, man. If you go back to the early days of Sir Lyndon Penlan, right, we were aspirational people, Matt. Mm-hmm. We thought that we could conquer the world. But somehow today, right, we are settling for so little.
Because we've been told sit small.
That's what we've been told. But so this is my point. We need, and I think we said this at the outset, we need to challenge everything in our country. Everything is on the table. Nothing is off the table.
A real revolution.
No, really, really. When you go to the Ministry of Works, right, you should challenge every single thing that takes place in there. You ask yourself a simple question as an example. Why does it take 8 weeks to approve a basic building plan, a house plan? Why is that necessary? Why can't that be done in 24 hours? Somebody say, huh, really, 24 hours? Yeah. Why can't it be done in 24 hours?
How long do you think it takes to get a passport in Canada?
I don't know.
Three days.
Huh? 3 days.
And if you rush it, you can have it in 24 hours.
But guess what? And here's what. If Canada can do it in 3 days, we should be able to do it in 1 day.
Exactly.
And this is why we should be able to do it in 1 day. We are a country of 400,000 people. That is it. Listen. The Bahamian people, we need to reject the notion that we have such entrenched problems that we can't get out of it. This notion, for example, that it's going to take years or a generation to correct our education problem is nonsense. Or it's going to take years for us to solve our crime problem. That's nonsense. Or we can't grow our economy by double digits. It's absolute foolishness. We can do all of those things. We have the ability to do all of those things. Every single one of them. All right?
Well, I tell people all the time, I tell them a story. A mother is teaching her daughter how to make a roast. So uh-huh. She takes the roast and she cuts the two ends off and puts it in the pan. And the daughter says, why do you cut the two ends off?
Right.
So the mother calls her mother and says, why do we cut the two ends off of the roast? So her mother calls her mother and says, why do we cut the two ends off? And the great-grandmother says, because it didn't fit in the pan we had. That is often what is happening here.
That's exactly right.
Why does it take 4 weeks?
Exactly.
Because that's how long it's taken.
Exactly. And no one is challenging it. And listen, you know, the young people out there who are listening, you know, like I said.
And they have no patience for that.
I'm 52 now. But you guys, you've got to challenge every single thing, the way everything is done.
And
you
have no patience for those waiting guys.
You have to challenge what's done in cabinet. You have to challenge what's done the way parliament is being done. You have to challenge the way you get your driver's license, the way you get your passport. Challenge every single thing. Don't be married to absolutely nothing, okay?
Let's take a quick call. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, thanks. A similar twist to that story is because my oven was too small. But, I tell you what is really affecting us. I've got a 9-year-old female, and she doesn't feel good unless she buys hair. She thinks she doesn't look good the way she was naturally born.
Yeah.
And for that, she probably doesn't perform as well in school. Because she has to look like some other people.
Yeah.
And I think that is mentally having a great impact on her performance. I don't know why, but maybe you can help her to get over that.
Well, I'll tell you this. We have been...
I'm going to leave that one to you.
In a lot of different ways, we have been taught that we cannot succeed. We are not good enough. We should not have high expectations. I think you're bringing a point that's actually understated in the Bahamas, mm-hmm. Where young people, for whatever reason, whether it be their hair, their clothing, their shoes or whatever, are feeling like they are not equal to the rest of the people. Therefore, I'm not going to excel because I don't want the spotlight to shine on me. They have the same thing happening in Jamaica right now with this skin whitening that is out of control. I don't know if it's gotten any better, but it's been happening for a little while. We really need to teach our youngsters. I have what a lot of people call an ego problem because I believe I can do anything I want. But that's not an accident. I was raised being told constantly, you can do whatever it is you want in this world. And I grew to believe that. Now, does that make me think I literally could go be an astronaut tomorrow? No, but it does lead me to feel like if there is a challenge, absolutely, I can try.
Listen, and let me tell you something. We have to be of the mindset, and I believe this firmly, and this is how I live my life. People who know me would know that I'm telling the truth. I do not believe that there is a single problem that cannot be resolved. I don't believe that. I don't believe that one exists. And here's what I can tell you and the Bahamian people, right? If we can put a man on the moon, right? If we can see and understand planets that are galaxies that are 1,000 light years away from where we are today, if we can understand that, are you telling me that this little country can't resolve the simple problems that we have? Yes, we can do it. What we need is we need the kind of leadership that will inspire us. We need to bring people together. We need to pull out the talent that Bahamians have. And we can do that.
Let me try and put it in perspective for you. The Bahamas, if it were in, and this the whole Bahamas, was mm-hmm. in America, it would be the 57th largest city in America. So let's just imagine that. The 57th largest city in America. If I told you the 57th largest city in America had one gold medal Olympian, you'd say that's possible. They could come from anywhere. Mm-hmm. If I tell you they had two, if I told you they had four, if I told you on top of that they had athletes in every single major league except hockey, you would start to say, what's happening in this little city? The 57th largest city in America had all of that, and a world famous televangelist, mm-hmm. and America's most favorite weatherman, mm-hmm. multiple Grammy winning artists. Mm-hmm. You would think I was lying to you about the 57th largest city in America. Mm-hmm. We've done all of that. Mm-hmm. We've already done all of that. Mm-hmm. When you say we should get together and inspire, the Bahamas inspires me on a daily basis. I see things that the people are doing in the Bahamas and then taking this out to the world, and it blows my mind.
No. Listen, we can do more, and we should be doing more. And I say that, I'm not saying that for the guy who's doing well. I'm really advocating for the guy out there who's not working, right? Who's sitting on the blocks, who has no hope. I'm saying this for the young mother out there who has 3, 4, 5 children, right? And she has no job. And when she goes to social services, it's difficult for her to get anything to help her. I'm saying this for her. I'm saying this for all of those, for the tens of thousands of Bahamians today who would want to go into business for themselves, who would want to advance up the corporate ladder. But for whatever reason, they're stumbling blocks for them. I'm talking about them. I'm saying they can do better. They want to do better. They want to take this country to another level.
And I'll say this to them. Uh-huh. There's a group in the world where only roughly 300 people from anywhere in the world can at one time be a part of, okay? There's a group, only 300 in the entire planet. And we have one who's a member and one whose son is a member. Think about that for a second. We have two members in that group.
I am not going to be persuaded to have low expectations of ourselves. That's not going to happen.
I'm talking about a group where, obviously I'm talking about the NBA, right? I'm talking about the NBA, but
on the planet, there's only roughly 300 people who can be a part of that.
Well, fine, that's great. I'm happy for those two. I'm happy for those two. But look at what other people can achieve. I'm not going to relegate myself to the category of people. There are too many of them over there who have low expectations of themselves and of this country. I belong to that little group over there. I believe, man, that we can do so much more.
Oh, I'm
I believe
with
that
you.
We can do
and,
so much more.
And I'm saying, look at what we've already
and not
done.
Only, I think that we can do so much more for ourselves and so that we can help others as well. And that is perhaps more meaningful.
And that
frankly.
Might be where we're losing ourselves, because mm-hmm. that last part of helping others, we may have started to stray away from that concept a little bit.
Absolutely.
And that's probably where things go wrong, is when we stop trying to help our community. And as my dad always says, we need to remember that once we had community, mm-hmm. Once I was my neighbor's keeper.
You know, listen, I attended a funeral on Saturday past, a grand aunt. She was 98 years old. This woman was a pillar in her community. And she had nine children. And she has countless grandchildren and great-grandchildren. But you know what? She worked. She had a government job. She was a maid at one of the facilities. But you know what she did? Everything she earned, she would give it to people. She mm-hmm. gave everything she had. You know what else she did? She would adopt people. You know, if you didn't have some place to stay or whatever,
if
she'd
I didn't
bring
know
you
different,
into her house.
I would swear you were talking about my grandmother who
yeah.
passed away in January. She did
exactly.
the same thing.
And that's what she did. But you know what's so amazing, and I thought about it on Saturday, is that despite the fact that she would give every single thing that she had, she didn't lack anything.
Let's take a call. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you?
Good, good, good. Listen, it's one conversation that we don't seem to be having, right? And, you know, it's this connection or disconnection between job and productivity. Now, I'm of the opinion that our people are not in need of jobs. Okay?
Okay.
I'm of the opinion that our people are in need of opportunity. But a particular mindset of dependency has been cultivated and engendered over the past 40 plus years, you know, where, you know, this job thing sticks in our mind. Now, we, for some reason, we are in a particular place where it seems as if stuff just happens. Okay, you know, I mean, our people go anywhere in the world, and anywhere we find ourselves, we punch above our weight level.
Amen.
Okay, we punch out of our class. Okay, and see, I think that, you know, this preoccupation with foreign direct stuff, you know, it has its place, but it has to be connected with what we do in this culture as a people. Okay? See, we have made the mistake of importing, you know, views and perceptions that are alien to who we are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it running?
Yes.
Your father has a bad habit of stopping me, and each time he stops me, a half an hour.
Yep, at least
comes out of my schedule. Okay, you know, I see, you know, his views, you know, are like you know, it's like people don't want to listen to him and what he has to say, you know, but. You know, after he leaves this place, he's going to be seen as a prophet. You know, but I will stay in touch with him as long as I can, and just keep picking that brain of his, man.
Like I said, yes, at least a half hour, but it won't be a half hour wasted.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention that he's absolutely right in the difference between opportunity and jobs. We have, and it's sort of a sad thing that I find, that we rate governments based on how many jobs they create and how many homes they build. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is mostly a Nassau problem. I went down to Long Island last year, and I ran into someone who I had not seen in years, 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. And I asked her what she was doing. Mm-hmm. As a very Nassauvian thing, I said, what's your job? And she says, well, I do residential managing. So I manage some houses for some people. Mm-hmm. I got a fishing boat that I send out as well. Mm-hmm. And she had about four different things that she was doing. Mm. And I was like, so you don't have a job? She's like, this Long Island, nobody have one job.
Right, right.
And that is the mentality, I think, that Carla was talking about, is right. We need to be giving people opportunities.
Absolutely.
As opposed to jobs. And I'll agree with both of you that the foreign direct investment is necessary, so therefore the jobs will be there.
Mm-hmm.
But we do need to do a better job of creating opportunities for Bahamians to be innovative and succeed at.
Yeah. Let's see if we can say that a little differently, right? I think that what the government, and this would be consistent with what you said earlier, I think that the government should facilitate the ideas and the innovations that people have, right?
Right.
And that's where, so we don't want the government necessarily to create opportunities, right? We want the government to facilitate. We want them to be able to approve things that need to be approved rapidly. We need them to be able to put into place legislation rapidly. We need them to stop playing interception, right? We need them to get out of the way.
Exactly. Get out of the way.
That's what you want the government to do, to get out of the way.
And it's not only government, though. We also, the number one lack of opportunity, and I noticed from personal experience, I see tons of Bahamians with great ideas all the time.
Right.
No access to capital.
Absolutely.
And until we solve that, we're not going to fix the problem of innovation and opportunity.
And that's a real good point. You cannot have, in a developing country, you cannot have banks mainly, right, that catering primarily to consumer lending. That's not going to cause your economy to grow substantially. So you're right. That is something.
Because again, paying that loan to buy Christmas gifts is one thing.
Yeah, that
but is. But creating an opportunity where a Bahamian now is making $100,000 a year that he was not making before, and can not only pay you back the loan that he got for the business, he can now buy a new car. See, he can now buy a house and get a mortgage with you. You know what I mean? It unlocks the potential.
But you see, but here again, though, right? Is where we have to talk about a little bit of personal responsibility. Because the extent to which Bahamians decide that they're not going to get that consumer loan for that vacation, right? They really don't need it.
Right.
Yeah. Or you're not going to get that consumer loan for hairdo or clothes or whatever, that kind of thing, right? To the extent that Bahamians are not demanding it, banks are going to be compelled to find other sources of income, right? And they're going to say, well, you know what? Maybe we do need a small business division here. Maybe we do need to create some avenues for businesses to do well, our clients to do well, that kind of thing. So we have to be more responsible as well. And can I take this opportunity, and when we talk about personal financial responsibility, we cannot dismiss the impact of gambling on that situation. I think it is an indelible stain on the legacy of the Progressive Liberal Party that under its watch, it permitted to happen in our country what we see today. I think that it is sad. And I mean, you know, I sometimes drive, and you know, because this is really something that
they'll tell the
I
people find because very most painful. People, some people might not know what you're why you're saying this is such a big deal.
It's a big deal, you know. Wherever you go, I mean, I don't know. I can't say that I've traveled the world, right? But where I have traveled, right, I've not seen these establishments in communities like I see them in the Bahamas, you know, where you can go and gamble, where you can, you know, I if someone would call in and tell me where have they seen this kind of thing happening legally, I'd really like to know it. Where, for example, where they've seen them, the presence of them, where they have seen them being able to advertise the way that they do.
So I will tell you, and actually I've seen it.
You have? Where have you seen it?
Montreal.
In Montreal, really?
So let me tell you, they came out with, and really? I don't remember, sometime 2000, 2001, they came out with these video lottery terminals.
Really?
Where they were putting them in bars. Like, uh-huh. So it's just a terminal.
Okay.
And you go and you could do, and pretty much it was just spinning.
Really?
And you could go and spin.
Uh-huh.
And they had it attached to your debit card.
Really?
So you know how you can't take out less than $20?
Right.
Well, if you only had $10 in there, you could put in your debit card. And in Montreal, it got so bad that uh-huh. they pulled each and every
okay.
one of them.
Okay.
Because
okay.
they said this is killing communities.
Right.
So I've seen it happen, and right. I've seen the devastation.
And you've seen the devastation.
And they've pulled them out. Now, right. I don't know if they pulled them out all. I think, well, we still have a casino in Montreal, but I don't see them in the
communities.
And they were everywhere. I mean, every single bar in Montreal had one.
How can you, how is that, right? You go to a mall. A mall.
Yeah.
And you go, you step out of your door. You live in the inner city. You step out of your door just in front of you.
Yep.
I mean, what is this? What have we done to this country?
And I think we do really need to look at the impact of that on our economy, because Bahamians have less disposable income, and
Absolutely.
Now are using income for other things than what they were using them before.
You look at what happens on the family islands. I was chatting with a young man Saturday, right? And he has a house on a family island, right? One of our family islands. And, you know, it's his parents' home kind of thing. And he said, the young lady who lives in the house came to Nassau. He said, you know, he was so happy to see her because she hasn't paid him rent in 6 years, right?
Yeah.
So she owes him $6,000 or some ridiculous figure. And he said, she came to him and said to him that she wants $3 to catch the bus. And she explained to him that she's not been able to pay the rent because her husband takes all of the money and gambles it away.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and take a call. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Yeah, we just filed a recent report on the statistics. And we have an issue here now where the lady is saying that they can only do a report every 10 years because of lack of funding. And here it is. We had the former prime minister of the PLP coming forward. He's more concerned about whether his colleagues are going to be convicted as opposed to trying to find out where most of the funds would have went, you know, that he has trusted these men with. I mean, it is sad that we could have found millions of dollars to put towards Carnival. And we don't have the kind of concern to know about the population and how it is growing and who is here and the numbers. This is more critical than anything else. You know, let the chips fall where they may as it relates to what the court is doing. And I think it is sad that both former prime ministers are coming out speaking. I think the only time they should be speaking is in France, where they're trying to educate or impart wisdom into the young generation. Other than that, they need to go under the grape tree or the banana tree or the juju tree and enjoy their life. They need to steal the media.
I hear you. Let's take another call. Go ahead, caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm listening to the show, and I couldn't help but call when you touched on gambling. Because this is the biggest elephant I've ever seen in the room that nobody seems to recognize or acknowledge.
I agree with that.
And I'll be frank. As you said, or I would say, I would go a little further in saying that gambling and the statistics will show it. We're doing statistics on everything else. We need to do a survey on the adverse effects of gambling.
Absolutely.
On the Bahamian household, the
Absolutely.
Bahamian period.
Absolutely.
I called Carlton Smith's show the other morning, and I was grieved. I'll be honest with you, mm-hmm. I was grieved.
Mm-hmm.
If I say to you that a vice that has been allowed to practice in our country
mm-hmm.
is turning decent Bahamian women into prostitutes, and the best response you can give me is, well, you need to bring empirical data. What I would say, if someone says something like that is happening to our Bahamian women, what I would say is, if this is true, I need to know. We need to know. And we need to do something about it.
I agree completely.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems is it's very difficult to find out a correlation between one thing and the other. So we have lots, and at least I've heard lots of anecdotal evidence about the devastation that this is causing. People, school fee not getting paid, lights been turned off, on their handheld device, just $300, $400, $500 in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's money. And I've watched it too. I've watched people say, I've poured in $1,000 into this, and now I need to put all the last bit of money in because otherwise I can't survive the month. So I need to hit my number to fall, so I have to keep playing.
Yeah, what is that, right? I mean, if you think about this carefully, what would compel a caring government to permit something like this? How do you rationalize? How do you rationalize institutionalizing, legalizing a cancer on the backs of your people? How do you do that? How do you justify that?
The difficulty is, I don't think that anybody, and I mean, I may be completely wrong, I don't think that anybody foresaw the explosion that would happen.
But no, but we said it. We said that it would happen. We knew that it would happen.
In my wildest dreams, it was never this bad.
I mean, you go, you know, and listen, you no matter where you drive, right? You drive by the number house, and you drive at the food store, and you count the cars. And some of them, you know, they have these drive-through, I think.
Yep.
You know, there's one out there in the Chippenham area. I think that's a drive-through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, amazing. Right there in the heart of the community.
Well, so the concept was supposed to be regulation that went along with legalization so that we would see what was being spent, what was being earned. I have not seen any report on that regular or regulation. What has been happening? What has been done?
But you know, and actually, now that is a very important point, right? I think, and going back to what the caller said about us doing a survey, I think I agree with him that we ought to have a sense. I think responsible government ought to ensure that we know how this vice is affecting our people. But what is very easy for us to do today, I would hope, is to release the numbers. Let's put the numbers out there. I've always been amazed by the fact that policy makers believe that we're not entitled to numbers. We're not entitled to information. Release the information with respect to what's happening with these number houses. Release all of it. How much money each one of them is earning. What the taxes are with respect to it. Let's see it so that we can, how many clients do they have? How many, you know, let's see that. Let's see all of it.
Because and this was again during the time of the referendum, they were saying they had, 100,000 clients?
Wow.
which is mind-boggling for me.
It is
mind-boggling for me. We have one text message here that says, gents, these number houses should be closed forthwith. They are only enriching a few people.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I say, the damage being done, I don't know how quickly you can turn around from that.
I mean, the thing is, they're not adding any value to the economy at all. I mean, you know, we really need to look at it very closely.
Someone is saying this is why the hobby horse track was closed.
Mm.
I don't remember horse racing like that.
I don't know.
My father keeps reminding me of it.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we've ended on a bit of a difficult note, let's try and go right back up to another brighter note. We were talking about the Bahamian people, the Bahamian spirit, absolutely, and the limitless possibilities. Absolutely. What's the last thing you want to say before we have to go?
Absolutely. And I'm happy you're giving me the opportunity to say this. I think that there is tremendous potential resident in this country. I was inspired just on Thursday of last week when I saw the news report of a young man who decided that he would take $1 million from his personal earnings, right, to ensure that the doors of opportunity are open for initially three other young men and potentially many more. I think that's brilliant. That speaks of the kind of character that we have, right? That's old island thinking, man. That's old island stuff. That's Bahamian, right?
Exactly.
You know, yeah. And I am also encouraged by the tenacity of Bahamians. When I go on Facebook and I see people who are consistently putting ideas out there, even though their ideas aren't being listened to, are being disregarded, and some of them are being called crazy,
all
kinds of stuff, right? But they're not giving up. They are persistent, man. That's the kind of character, that's the kind of Bahamian that we have. And when I see Bahamians who are, and we talked earlier about families who are not doing well, some of whom are unemployed, but they are making sure that their children are in school and are getting a good education, man, that inspires me. I'm really, if I had to invest in the new Bahamian today, I would absolutely do so. I think that this country has a bright future, and I think that they are going to upend the system. They're not going to be better to any of this stuff. They're going to change it. I want to live long enough for that to happen, my brother.
To see that revolution.
Absolutely.
How timely. Thank you very much for being on today. I hope it wasn't too difficult.
Not at all.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. This is The Revolution with your guest host, Imwale Ramming, and my guest, Lyndon Nairn. It's been a great 2 hours, and we'll talk to you later.